Hey folks, I'm here to tell you about Stitcher. With Stitcher's free mobile app, you can listen to your favorite radio programs and podcasts anytime and anywhere you want. Stitcher's wide breadth of programming lets you choose from the latest in news, sports, talk, business, and entertainment from the media industry's premier content providers. It's the easiest way to stay connected to your world while on the go. Receive news that's important to you in a format that fits into your busy day. Downloading is easy. Just go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, let's get down. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I've got a great show for you today. My guest is a very old friend of mine, a fantastic, fantastic guy, great musician, producer, now has a label. He's been a video director, my friend, Kyle Ellison. Before we get to that, though, this show is coming out a couple of days late. If you normally expect it on Friday and it's coming out on Sunday and you're like, hey, man, what happened? Well, let me tell you what happened. Obviously, it was Thanksgiving. That's the one thing. And I traveled out of town for Thanksgiving, then also played a show out of town, came back, and went to sleep. But what happened was, I was going to put the whole show together on Tuesday before Thanksgiving, before I left town on Wednesday morning. And what happened Tuesday, I got up, and I went and did some errands, went and took care of my dogs. And then I got home, and I felt really nauseous. Then I just started getting sick. All kinds of sick. I'm talking about dual action exodus from the body. For about 6 hours, I was doing that. Every like 40 minutes, having just this eruption, what's that called? Old Faithful, like some kind of geyser from the face and you know where. So anyway, I had that happen, and that left me completely wiped out. I don't know, you know, I didn't eat then. Okay, so then I missed Tuesday. I didn't put the show together. I didn't do the intro. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even get out of bed except for to go to the bathroom. And I was literally like that from like 1 in the afternoon until I got up at like 6:30 in the morning on Wednesday, got my shit together to leave town for Thanksgiving, and left early, like at 8. And I didn't eat like from Monday night until Wednesday afternoon. When I got to my cousin Eric and Tessa's house, I hung out for a little while with Eric, ended up having some soup, then a bit of a turkey sandwich, then ended up eating dinner. Great time with the family. But then, let me tell you, I just never really got a chance to recover. I got right back into it. You know, Wednesday, after we had the lunch, we got our shit together, started getting the brine with the turkey. Then we were having dinner with my aunt and uncle, my cousin Jenny, of course, Eric and Tessa. So there was a lot of people to have food for and stuff. So we got the food together. The people came over. We all hung out. Got up the next morning at like 6:30 in the morning and began preparing the Thanksgiving feast, which my cousins Eric and Tessa host. And they did a great job, as always. Always. Anyway, so I'm kind of like their dude. I'm like their guy, like their assistant during the Thanksgiving. Like, I've talked about it before. Hey, chop this, take this out, move this. Can you take this out? Watch this so it doesn't burn. Stir this, whip this, slice this. So anyway, really, that's what I do. And then also provide a running commentary of humor. And so that happened. We did the Thanksgiving. It was crazy. Tons of people there. I was well over 20 people, I'm sure. My grandparents and then babies and then had a great time playing with my cousin Elena. Got to see my little cousin Lucy for the second time. Of course, this Chris, my little cousin Chris, she had a great time too. We popped caps. We ate food. It was great to be with my family, my grandparents. I got up early, of course, completely wiped out by the end of that. No resting for the weary. We got, you know, we lay down and watch a show or something, but then we were asleep. Guys throwing a party next door, next to the room that I'm sleeping in on the other side of the house from Eric and Tessa at their house. This guy's having a party that includes dance music, a very loud talking lady that I think was afraid no one was going to hear her within a 6 mile radius while talking. And then intermittent sawing, like the sawing went on until about 1 a.m. But the loud talking lady and the music literally until 4:30 a.m. These people were getting down. So anyway, that was weird. Then I got up super early, went over to my Uncle Chuck and Aunt Christina's house, had some breakfast and coffee with them. Went into Houston. This is Friday, of course, Black Friday. Went into Houston, did my independent record store thing that I'm doing, my Christmas thing that I've talked about, buying presents, music, independent record stores. Went to Cactus, owned by my pal Quinn there in Houston. I went down there, walked around, got some stuff. Ended up getting a shirt, and then went over to my grandparents' house, and I took a little nap. I mean, I was tired. I was like, man, had to play that night at House of Blues with Skyrocket. I had to bring the thunder. You know what I mean? With Skyrocket, you got to bring the thunder. There's 6 other people that are kicking ass. If you get up and you're not kicking ass, you're a wiener. So anyway, I always have that going on. So I took a little nap at my grandparents' house, had lunch with my aunts, my grandparents, super great time. Took off, went down, sound check, show, friends came down, and I did the show, straight 2-hour set, exhausting, got to my hotel, woke up the next morning, and left really early, and then came back to Austin thinking, well, I get back on Saturday, and I'm going to do my intro and everything into my podcast, get it all together, and of course, I got here, and I felt real tired after I ran a couple of errands. Laid down on the couch to take a little nap. This is no joke. At about 3. Woke up 12:30 at night. I was like, what? I literally just went to sleep. I think I got up at one point and I went to the bathroom and I was like, oh, maybe I've been taking a nap for an hour. I'm going to go lay down in the bed. And that's what ended up happening. So I woke up. It's 12:30. I'm like, oh my God, it's crazy. So I went back to sleep until about 5:30. So anyway, now it's Sunday. I'm back. I'm feeling a lot stronger. I'm feeling healthier. And so I thought, well, I'll put out the podcast now, even though it's 2 days late. It's Sunday. Thank you for sitting through my bullshit. Skyrocket, we had a good time at the House of Blues. Eric and Tessa, you guys are amazing. I don't know how you do all that shit, how you learn how to cook so well. I'm glad I'm there to assist, and I love my family a lot. Was not traumatic, except for it was fucking loud. And it got to a point where, I know this sounds weird, but I put in my fucking earplugs for like the last hour while people were there. I don't think anyone really noticed, but I just put them in because it was so loud that it was kind of overwhelming. All right? I hope you guys all had a good Thanksgiving. I'm done with Movember. I shaved my beard this morning. And I left it as a mustache. So you can check it out on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Or go to the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. If you haven't liked that page, get over there to How Did I Get Here on Facebook. Like it. There's pictures on there. I updated, you know, pictures of when I go to the independent record stores and shop to let you know what's going on and that I'm actually doing it. I encourage you to do the same thing. Post your pictures on there. And or tag us in your pictures when you do it on yours. How did I get here? Like the page. And also, you can see my mustache on Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy. Okay? Oh, God. All right. My guest today is a musician, a producer, a visual artist, and now a record company entrepreneur. Is that right to say? Yeah, and a very dear old friend of mine. He's my friend Kyle Ellison. I met Kyle a very long time ago when he was in a band called Pariah with his brother Sims Ellison, whom we talk about a lot in this podcast. And also then he went on to be in the Meat Puppets, the Butthole Surfers, Gibby Haynes and His Problem, Rocky Erickson, a lot more. And he ended up directing videos like documentaries for the Archangels and Rocky Erickson. He's produced records for Popular Culture, Tristan Rudon. He's working on a record for Laura Scarborough. And he's got a new label project called Sparrow Songs. And you can find out more about that at sparrowsongsmusic.com. Anyway, Kyle and I go back a long way. When he was in Pariahs, when I met him, maybe 1990 or so. And then when I moved here, I became friends with him and his brother and the rest of the band. All these guys that I ended up doing stuff with and hanging out with. I was actually in a band with their drummer, Shandon Somm, who we talk about. at some point in the 90s. And anyway, Kyle and I have never really gotten a chance to really hang out and sit down and talk about stuff. But we both suffered losses in our lives, and also the foundation that was started from his brother's death ended up really helping me through coping with my mom's death and the loss of that and kind of the anger that came along with it. So he's a very dear person to me, and he's a really interesting person. He's a sweet person, and we actually do have a tremendous amount of laughs during this podcast, and I really hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. So here is my dear friend, Kyle Ellison. Let's get down. Make that guy go bankrupt and all this stuff, and I was like, I can't, like, the red light's on, like, you're on a microphone and you're saying all this stuff, and I was so stressed out when I left, like, I had all this anxiety, and I got an email at, like, it was from, like, 5 in the morning, hey, man, can you take that stuff out that I said? I was like, oh, thank God,
you
I probably would have taken it out, though, because it was harsh.
It was, yeah.
It was something you really wouldn't want out there, and I don't want to, you know what I mean, I don't want this show to
hurt people.
Yeah, and plus, who will come on the show afterwards? You know what I mean? Once you start fucking with people, yeah, who's going to want to come on and talk to you?
Yeah, well, it's just, yeah, I mean, you don't want to spread any...
No, ill will. Do you feel pressure when you're producing somebody? Like,
I feel a lot of responsibility, yeah. Like an ungodly amount of, like, responsibility, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's sacred and it's not mine. And it's, yeah. I don't know. It's like, okay. I mean, I feel a lot of pressure to not fuck it up.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Any influence you put on it, maybe hopefully that's helpful.
It seems like you're doing, like, just in the things that you sent me that you produced, and I'm really familiar with the Angel M album because I love that album. She's such a special, talented person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's just... She's one of those people that blows my mind because she's got that, you know, she just does that.
And like David or something.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, just picks up stuff and does it.
She's like a prodigy. She's playing some guitar stuff that one time and I was like, I mean, who can do that, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. But that one was a lot different. I don't know what Laura's is like, but there is definitely did you listen to a lot of techno and industrial
electronic music and stuff? No, I just like all music. You know, I was in jazz band when I was in high school, and
I grew up in San Antonio.
Yeah, but I just liked all. You know, I'm like all of us. I just like anything that has a lot of soul and you know, just something you feel. And yeah, so I don't really discriminate against sound as much. Like I was way into Devo, and you know, I mean, I guess that's kind of electronic, yeah. Right? You know, stuff like that.
And you worked with Ministry?
I did.
Did you do a video for them?
Yeah, I did their live video show, which was really cool because we made a video sampler, and it was kind of before they were doing that.
Right.
So we had to, like, write the software ourselves.
And, wow.
Yeah, and then we signed the whole, each song, all the video to keyboard, and then I had to play it live. So if you messed up, the video messed up. Like, we didn't just, like, run it. You know, you had to play it.
Oh my
like
God.
A video instrument. Yeah, it was super fun. Yeah, it was cool.
Was it fun?
Oh, it was a blast.
Did it ever go like
it was that south? That was oh man, that tour was like one of the most intense things I've ever experienced in my life. You know, I could only imagine like comparatively if that's like what it's like to be in the military or something. I don't know. But it was intense.
What do you mean?
It's hard. I mean, you know, they're the real thing, you know. Al Jurgensen's not pretending. He's
yeah.
Yeah.
He's a serious dude.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've been, there's some intense motherfuckers you've played with. I mean, like, Gibby isn't known for not being intense. and Kurt Kirkwood is not known for not being intense.
And it's always mind boggling to me because I don't feel very intense, you know? Do you know what I mean? I like look around and I'm just always like, but you know, after Sims died and then I was kind of thrown into this whole other, you know, scene. Well, I mean, I was into that scene. I listened to that music, but I never thought I would be playing in those bands. You know what I mean?
Right. When you were in Pariah, you were like in...
That was a family, and it was, you know...
You guys planning on doing that forever.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. And so, and then when that ended, so like it was like the space shuttle, you know? It like shot off, and then it just blew up. But yeah, so... I don't know. Yeah. And then the next thing, 4 months later, I was on tour with the Meat Puppets and I was, you know, just shattered and I could barely function. And I think that's real, you know, Kurt was really a caring guy. You know, he saw that I needed help and he took me on a tour because he thought it would be good for me, I guess. I don't know what he thought, but.
Well, because, you know, we're artists, you know, there's really nothing you can do after something like that except throw yourself into what you do.
And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even walk, basically. I mean, I was shattered, you know? And, I mean, grief is hardcore.
So, it's hardcore.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it took something like that to force me to, you know, it was like, do this, you know? And
yeah.
I don't know. I think it was one of the healthiest things I could have done because, you know, in Austin, it was, you know, a lot of people obviously knew Sims. And so everywhere I went, that's the topic. And
everywhere.
I couldn't. Yeah. And so it just plucked me right out of that.
And even if it wasn't the topic, people weren't talking about it.
It was a topic either way. Yeah.
Like consciously not talking about
exactly.
It. It was always like part of the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that. It was like that for a while. That was a very, I mean, obviously it was your brother and your family and everything, and that was earth shattering. But even in the scene, it was a scene shattering.
It was shocking.
Shocking thing.
Everybody was grieving.
He was a very lovely guy that everybody cared about and was always really, really nice. I mean, I didn't know him super well, but I always thought both of you guys were really, really cool, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was so, I mean.
Yeah. So let's go. How did Pariah start? What were you guys... Did you guys start that band together? Were you here? Were you in San Antonio?
I was in San Antonio. I was about 14 or 15. I can't remember exactly how old I was. But I just wanted to start a band. And so, you know, Sims was always on it, you know. And he was like, oh, yeah, man, you want to start a band? Okay, I'll learn bass. And he didn't even play bass at that point. You know, he just got... I was playing guitar.
Right.
And I was like, I want to start a band. He was like, I'll play bass. And then... and Shannon was in my... I can't remember which class it was now, but he was in my class in high school. And
what was he?
Junior high.
Was he like that in junior high and in high school?
Oh, he was awesome. He was super into Kiss, and
yeah,
he was awesome. Yeah, and Sims was like, you know, you need to get Shannon because he's the most famous kid in your high school because he's Doug Thompson. So
right,
that never crossed my mind. I just knew Shannon because, you know, we both like to hang out and talk about Kiss and
yeah. What were you into at the time when you guys started that band?
I was really into Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
I was really into Black Sabbath. I was into a lot of rock. You know, I loved everything from the Stones to the Beatles, all the normal stuff. But I was also into a lot of, like, you know, what I consider like heavy metal almost. You know,
yeah.
I loved Black Sabbath. I loved Ozzy.
Yeah.
I loved all that stuff. But at the same time, I was also into Jeff Beck. You know, I had this guitar teacher who was... I remember I would take him, you know, Ozzy with Randy Rhoads, and he would just stop the tape deck and look at me, and he'd go, no, you know, and then he'd put on, like, 'Cause We Invented as Lovers, and that's what we'd learn that day, and I wouldn't even know. I'd be like, wow, you know, and then I'd be all into Jeff Beck all of a sudden, you know what I mean?
'Cause that's so cool.
Well, yeah, his name was Peter Carey, and he really was cool.
Yeah?
And yeah. I mean, I would have gone, horribly wrong if it wasn't for Peter. I don't know if that would have been wrong, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you... So then how did you guys end up with Jared and Dave?
Jared, we played a battle of the bands in San Antonio, and Jared's band kicked our butt. I mean, like, just, they were called Cheater, and they just blew us away, and they won. And so we were like, we need to get that guy in our band. So we asked Jared, and we were blown away. He actually said yes.
Yeah.
And then Dave, we need a singer. Shannon was singing. So that was pretty cool, actually. We were like this three-piece with Shannon singing.
Oh, from behind the drum set.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But he would always say all this stuff in between songs. And we decided we wanted singers so he wouldn't say all this stuff in between songs. And then we ended up with Dave. And Dave said more in between songs. So be careful what you wish for.
So how old were you guys when you solidified that lineup?
I'm horrible at dates, but I mean, I would have what, to, like probably a year. Like 16 or, okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, really 17 maybe.
Yeah. Wow.
Pretty so, young. We used to wait outside of clubs because we were too young to go in, you know, yeah. Like to drink. And so they'd make us wait outside.
Yeah.
And then we would get to play and we, you know. Which kind of defeated the purpose because we would just, like, you know, party in the van. But it didn't stop. Anyway.
But. You know what? So what were you guys, how different were you than, say, when I saw you in, like, 1990?
We were horrible. We.
Well, there was an element.
We weren't horrible, but.
You guys weren't so much of a straight-up metal band. I would say you guys were a loud, rambunctious rock and roll band.
Well,
kind
thank
of
you.
In the
you're
vein
one
of a Guns N' Roses as opposed to a, you know what I mean?
You're one of the few people who actually noticed that because we, you know, we were, you know, people used to call us a metal band and we thought we were a rock band, you know, we were right. Into high energy rock.
Yeah.
Like, and so, you know, we were like, yeah, how are we a metal band when we cover Bob Dylan and Rocky Erickson and,
yeah.
You know, we thought we were a rock band. So, but I think the name Pariah, you know, sounded yeah, metal yeah. To people. And then, you know, we were like really loud.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I don't think we're metal at all. I think we're straight up. I mean, you know, we're covering all the covers we pick. Kind of say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. Not that anybody knows what those are, but
right, right. So I remember when I first heard of you guys, and I came here to do recording with Mark Hallman, and I lived in Houston at the time. I guess it was like it was like 1990, and you guys were really like exploding. Like there wasn't there bidding wars and
well Austin was always really nice to us and we had a really but we really you know we really tried to earn our fans one by one and we worked really hard at that and you know we had a fan club and
oh, yeah I mean
my mom was a PR lady so I mean we were all over like trying to build a fan base
yeah
and so if you came to see Pariah Live it looked like you know everybody loved us because those were actually our fans
yeah.
You know what I mean I mean they were actually you know
yeah.
So that was kind of cool, and, you know, it was a trip.
Yeah. So you guys ended up signing with Geffen, and then when your record came out, you had really, well, I just remember the first single was a lot more industrial sounding than you guys were before, to me. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, because they released Powerless first, which in retrospect is kind of a shock. I think you're totally, you nailed that one. I mean, that was probably, I mean, actually a mistake if you really think about it, because they picked this song that was like heavier than we were. And it was actually kind of different. I mean, I love that song, but it was, to us, it was like on the outskirts of who we were. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that was the weird thing about Pariah is we were just starting to come into our own when a lot of that stuff was happening. So by the time we got in the studio, we had thought we had found kind of where we were headed towards, but you know, everybody else wanted us to do what we were doing 2 years ago. Cause that's what they thought we were, you know? So we were kind of like off, we were out of time in a lot of ways with ourselves. Like we, you know what I mean? Like we were
totally.
Like we were so young that we were like, you know, imitating sounds we were like, and still learning how to incorporate that. And then as we kind of figured it out, it was all already happening. And then, you know, we turned in all these songs that everybody was like, what's this? You know, and we were like, we were super excited. You know, we were like, this is our new stuff, you know. And so it turned into a fight between the record company pretty quickly about, you know, the direction, for instance.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did they wanted you to do? What you were doing a couple of years before? And then, I mean,
they
I
wanted
that
but worse, you know, they wanted, I mean, they literally, we had all these ideas for album titles and covers and I'll never forget it. You know, he came to us and he was like, you know what? I want you to call your album Bikini Roadkill. And we all almost died. Like we were so depressed. I mean, we were in a bad situation, you know, in my opinion. I mean, we were really fortunate in a lot of ways, but we also, you know,
because they didn't support the record for very long. I mean, I was in the same kind of situation where it seemed like, oh, you guys are going to be these guys. And then all of a sudden, like literally the day your record comes out, no one answers the phone anymore. And you're like,
right. And well, in our case, even worse, they signed us and then sat on it for almost 3.5 years.
Yeah, I remember that.
They just kind of let it pass. And we kept trying to make our record. And we were supposed to go in with Terry Date, who did, you know, Soundgarden, and he did a bunch of records, but and he was super excited about our record, and they wouldn't let us use them. They wouldn't let us do any of these cool things. They kept saying you have to wait. But I think what they were really doing was trying to get us to wait till after Use Your Illusions came out, which is what ended up happening.
Because you guys would have created competition for them.
Well, take $100,000, I mean, this is back when music actually sold.
Yeah.
But if you take $100,000 worth of sales away from somebody, you know what I mean? It's 100,000 records, that's $1 million. I mean, you know, so we were about to sign with Chrysalis, with the guy who founded MTV. And that guy loved us. And we were his answer to all that stuff. And then Geffen kind of swooped in and signed us. And I think they would have been happy if something would have happened on a certain point. But I also think they were not willing to put any no effort into it, actually.
So that there wouldn't be competition for Guns.
I mean, I can only speculate. I look back at all this stuff now, and I have no idea what was going on, really, with all that, you know. But yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, questions I have about it, but it's not like I really have the answer. You know, I think it's just, you know, I remember talking to Doug Somm about it, and he was like, you know, I've been on like 8 labels, you know. When we got dropped, I was so bummed, and we're all so bummed. And he was like, welcome to the music business. You know what I mean? This is like the way it rolls.
Yeah, there's only two kinds of bands, like those that have been dropped and those that are about to be dropped.
I've never heard that. But
I'm paraphrasing Bum Phillips, the coach of the Houston Oilers, who said there's only two kinds of coaches.
Awesome. Yeah, so I mean, it turns out that was normal, you know, but we were young and naive and excited. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, of course, why wouldn't you be? Someone took an interest in what you do, and they wanted to make it, you know, big time. And you guys had, you guys were a great band. You guys had a great attitude. You had a great show. Your songs were great. It's obvious that you didn't just come up in some hard rock metal world. You also were around people like Doug Somm, and you absorbed the ability to write songs. And you were obviously covering Bob Dylan songs, and not, you know.
Yeah, well, we grew up together. So we were a real band in that way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. We were actually like grew up playing music together.
Yeah.
And so I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I thought we were a real band.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I also remember seeing you on Madonna's Deeper and Deeper video.
That's a good story, and that's all Sims. So can we tell it?
Please.
We were in the studio, and we were recording in Maverick, which was Madonna's studio. Mm-hmm. And it was also her record company or management office. I'm not really sure what it was. But anyway, so we're in the kitchen, and we're all just sitting there talking about, you know, whatever we're going to do. And Madonna walks in. And Sims, being Sims, you know, he wasn't really, you know, there was like not that boundary ever of like, you know, everybody was really equal in his eyes, like it should be.
Yeah.
But so he just was like, hey, Madonna, you know, we're about to go play pool. Do you want to come play pool with us? And I remember she didn't turn around. She didn't answer him. She just kept stirring her coffee and like slowly, you know, and I was like, oh, man, she's pissed. You know what I mean?
So you're not supposed to look at her or talk to her or something?
Well, I don't know, but she didn't respond. And then she just turned around and walked out really slowly. And I was like, Sims did it again, you know, because he was always doing something. And I was like, dude, you pissed off Madonna, you know? And he was like, oh, man, whatever. Fuck that. You know what I mean?
Sorry, excuse
my language. But so anyway, the next day, I'm recording guitar parts, and with me and Eddie Delena, who was the engineer at the time. And Madonna walks in with a Polaroid camera, and she's like, hey. And I'm just like frozen. You know, I'm like, Madonna's walking in. And she's like, you know, where's that guy with blonde hair? And I'm like, oh, my brother. And I was like, well, he's not here yet. And she's like, well, come here. She made me stand up against a wall, and she took a picture. And she was like, when your brother gets here, send him into my office. And I was like, I know where your office is, you know? And she was like, well, you go down the hall and you turn and whatever. So anyway, me and Eddie decide that we're going to mess with Sims and tell him that we got kicked out of the studio. So I start tearing down everything. And so when Sims comes in, I'm like packing cables and putting guitars away. And Eddie's like pulling patch cords.
Right.
And he's like, what are y'all doing? And we're like, we're out here, man. I was like, Madonna's like totally pissed off, you know, and we can't record here anymore. And Sims, being Sims, was like, whatever, where is, you know,
where's her office? I'll go talk to her.
and he was like, are you serious? And I'm like, dude, go talk to her. Office is down there. We're out of here. And so, but that's all we told him.
And so he went down there.
So he marched down there, and then he came back, and we were laughing so hard, and he was so, he was laughing too at that point. But I was like, well, what did she want, you know? And he was like, she wants me to be in her video. And I was like, what'd you say? He was like, well, ask her how much it paid. So he got $300.
That's awesome.
And we were in deeper and deeper, yeah.
Yeah.
And she told me to stand on the street corner and sell drugs because she said that's something I could do naturally. I thought that was she was really cool, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was really nice. I thought she was really cool. So
what
what she really
I love
was
the idea of her stirring the coffee all seriously when he's just like, hey, you wanna go shoot some pool? So
I think she really appreciated it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some songs that are being unearthed by Pariah.
Well,
now, is that what's going on? What's going on with the songs?
Basically, I'm re-releasing Rattle Your Skull.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to re-release the whole back catalog, but...
Rattle Your Skull is your independent...
It's the first record we made as the lineup that everybody knows.
Right.
Or everybody who liked Pariah knows. Right. But yeah, and it was also the one that built this buzz for us. And, you know, we sold 25,000 records on our own.
Wow.
Before Facebook, before the internet, you know, when you had to do
remember
it.
That time?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
That was so weird.
So awesome.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I'm re-releasing that and then hopefully the rest of the catalog.
On Sparrow Songs Music?
Uh-huh.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Sparrow Songs is just basically, you know, I've had all these experiences with trying to get, you know, it's like if you're trying to create something, you're like, hey, I want to do this, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you start doing it. And then you're like, well, hey, you have to go to this guy to do that.
Right.
And then you go to this guy and then it gets all messed up every time.
Yeah.
Eventually you're just like, you know what? I just want to figure out a way to just do this thing I'm trying to accomplish, this simple thing, you know? And so it's just a way to do that. And there's a little bit of support behind it. So it's kind of like street with help, you know?
That's great. Do you have like a team of people?
We do. We have a little team of really great people that are excited about it, and we're doing the best we can. I mean, we don't have a lot of money, so we're in the same boat as everything, but you know, nothing's stopping us from doing anything we want to do.
Right.
So,
well, it doesn't take a whole lot of money to do everything anymore.
Right. Yeah. So,
it just takes a lot of work.
Yeah. And we're willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so are you doing like your production and are you going to be, do your videos and your companies under this umbrella?
I'd stop doing video as much. I just want to play music. I mean, another reason I started this is because I just want to be able to put out my own music and not have to worry about it so much. You know what I mean? And I end up just loving working with people. So I end up making a lot of people's records, you know, and stuff. And
yeah.
Did I miss the question totally?
No, not at all. But you did do video. I mean, you were pretty serious about it for a while. You were going around. You did that Archangels thing.
Well, the video thing started with, it was actually Gibby who was like, hey, man, you know, because I used to love to play with Super 8 cameras and make loops and just like, you know, play with film and draw on film and paint on film and scratch film. And, and I was playing around with that a lot and you know, just like doing a lot of projections and stuff. And Gibby was like, why don't you make our show? For the buttholes. And so, you know, I had seen the buttholes. So that to me was like a huge, how could I possibly even do that? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I just started working on that and trying to get together a show with that, with Lori Surfer, who used to live in town. Who was an awesome 16mm projection girl. She does all this, like, she's the one who taught me how to paint on film.
How do you do that?
It's so cool. You paint on film. You know what I mean? You just do it, you know? And you can use bleach and all this kind of stuff. And you get acrylics.
Awesome.
And you can do other stuff. You can take the film leader and put, like, leaves in there and all grass and whatever you want and, you know, project through it.
That's
and it's
amazing.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
How do you – I bet is it hard to get, like, Super 8 film and 16mm film now?
There's places you can get it. I mean, I'm sure – it's harder than it used to be, but you used to be able to buy it just on the drag. I don't know if you still can at the co-op, but I'm sure you can. I don't know.
Yeah. Those are always weird. So what about the Archangels documentary? That's the one that came out in their live DVD, and you did did you shoot the shows too?
Yeah, I shot the shows and edited it and put it together and with Vance Holmes, who also shot it, he's the guy who did like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Couldn't Stand the Weather.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great, And Lee Daniels.
Lee Daniels. Yeah. But not Lee Daniels, the butler. No. It's a different Lee Daniels, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, he did The Unforeseen. He was a cinematographer on that, right, which is a great movie if anybody wants to check out a great movie. But
He's a Linklater's guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was a lot of great camera guys on that. They were just nice to let me also shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit. How much time did you spend with them? I mean, that must have... Was it Monzi was playing bass at that time?
Not at that time. No, that was later. Tommy? It was still Tommy, yeah. I did, okay. You know, it was like over a period of a year and a half of just traveling around with them and shooting a bunch of stuff. And
And those are like your homeboys, because where I met you at the Arc, and that was a, you know, your one of your managers owned the Arc, and it was like such a...
Family kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a family affair.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Chris Layton's house right now, so yeah. It's still a family affair.
Yeah, totally. So did you try? Where did you do? You did a show here and in Houston or something, or was it just shows here?
For the Archangels,
yeah.
It was, you know, Dallas, Houston. Okay. It was all the Texas cities basically, and yeah, that was about it. But you know, it's a cool documentary if you're interested. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
And I remember also seeing the stuff that you did with Matt Morris. I can't remember if Alexandra did you and Alexandra do that together? Or?
Yeah, she was there. She did all the photography for that.
Right.
Yeah. Charlie just called and was like, "Hey, you know, you want to come work on this project?" And I was like, "Yeah, cool. What is it?" And he was like, "Well, it's going to be Justin Timberlake." And I was like, I felt like I was the furthest thing from like that reality. You know, I was like, "Well, how would I work in that?" And then, yeah, I got there and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great learning experience to see Charlie do that. I mean, he's got to be the world's greatest producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the greatest.
He is.
He really is. He's just the coolest, nicest, fucking, what a jerk. he's always so nice. He's very gracious.
He is.
And he's very familiar. He treats us all like we're family.
Yeah, and he means it. I just think that's just how he is. You know, he's not like trying to treat us like that. Yeah. He's just Charlie. It's just awesome.
How did you enjoy traveling with the Meat Puppets? Like you were saying, like after Pariah, after your brother died, then after 4 months and you went out on the road. For how long? How long did you go?
2 years.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was really
wow.
It was great. I mean, it was a great band to be in, like, you know, that was the original lineup at the time. And so it was really musical. Mm-hmm. And we were playing, you know, we were opening up for bands like REM and, you know, Primus and just all these weird tours that were, you know. And then I think me and Kurt also had a really strong musical bond.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun to play guitar with him, you know, because it was like, it would just get cosmic, you know. And then we would do all these acoustic shows in between. And so it was a really great time, and it was, I really was living like, I mean, I was like a ghost, you know, I was in so much grief.
I remember that.
Yeah, but it was the right environment in a lot of ways for me to be in because, you know, because it was okay. Yeah. Nobody was telling me to be different, you know, it's just like, and it was a really safe environment in that way for me, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, I mean, when you're on a tour where everybody's messed up, it's okay to be messed up.
Yeah.
and it is okay to be messed up, you know what I mean?
Do you still get together with him? Do you see him?
I do.
Does he live here still?
Yeah, he just recorded at Yellow Dog, and I went to those sessions, and they were doing Rat Farm. And, you know, I love the way he writes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I remember, weren't you guys in, I think you guys were in someone's studio right before I was.
Was it the old
It's where Wire where Wire was.
What was that called?
Andy Taubes. Yeah. Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were in there.
Yeah. Right before we were. Cause
did we leave a lot of weird art
tons
behind?
Tons of drawings. Yeah.
I remember people used to come into our practice room and like leave with a look of horror on their face. Yeah.
Well, I just remember sitting there and just going like, "Hey man, who was in here?" Because I think it was Jim Valentine was the guy that was working there.
It was cool.
I was like, "Jim, what? Who was in here?" He'd be like, the Meat Puppets. I'd be like, "Man, I'm never going to listen to them the same way again. This is crazy." It's all like giant dicks going in faces and stuff.
You can't undo that stuff. It's, yeah, sorry.
No.
I hope you're okay.
So how did you end up in the Butthole Surfers?
Me and Kurt did an acoustic show in Santa Monica at McCabe's. Is that the guitar mm-hmm. store? And Paul is a good friend of Kurt's. Mm-hmm. And he was there, and he just saw us play, and he was like, hey, you know, we're going out on tour. Do you want to go with us? And so I did for another 2 years.
God, that's...
It was a long time to be out, but it was a great tour, you know. It was really... You can actually listen to it if you go to the Butthole Surfers... .com
to their, sent me some of that.
Yeah, stuff. Love that.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, it's a good recording of it.
It's interesting. Those guys were really given the room, I think, to grow as musicians because they were together for so long and they really were so vastly different by the end of their thing than they were from the beginning.
Right.
What a lucky and amazing. Are they pretty happy about that?
I mean, I don't know if they're happy or not, but they're. You know, to me, one of the greatest bands from Texas ever.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I just love Paul Leary's guitar playing. You know? I mean, that's one of the things where I was really fortunate is I actually got to play with two of my heroes, you know, Kurt Kirkwood and Paul Leary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never would have believed that when I was a kid that was going to happen.
Yeah. And you were like, you got to play in two legendary bands. I mean, more than that, like you played with Rocky.
It doesn't do you any favors around a campfire, dude. I mean, I was in Nashville, and they were like, hey, play us a song. And I was like, do you guys know, like, Lady Sniff? Or I literally can't jam with people.
Right. Well, at least now you know 13 of these situations.
Right.
Do you write and, I mean, I know you do write. Do you write and record, like, just you doing all the stuff and singing?
I do. I don't like my voice a lot. I do a lot of stuff with instrumental stuff. Like I did this song called Water, which ended up on with Tristan Rudat. Did you ever hear that one?
I did. I heard that. That's really good too.
I mean, I have a lot of my own stuff. I wrote a bunch of the Meat Puppet stuff that we did with Kurt. You know, that was about 50-50 music wise.
Wow.
I just don't write a lot. I don't like to sing. I don't like my voice a lot. You know, I never wanted to be the singer, you know?
Who was that you played with at the Elliott Smith thing? That sang.
That's Tess. Her name's Tess, and she goes by Molybden.
Molybden?
Yeah, and she's actually trying to get some money together to put out her 45 right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's. I love her.
Yeah, she's really cool.
She's cool.
Do you like to find people and do stuff? Collaborate. Hi, I'm Kyle. Will you go to the mall with me? I like to do stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Just stumble into the next right thing or whatever. I mean, I don't know. You know, some things just seem like they just kind of happen naturally, and I just try to go with that.
How'd you end up playing with Rocky? Was that with Kyle Schneider too?
Yeah. Well, actually, Troy called me up and asked me to do that, and I've known Rocky since I was 15. You know, so I was, of course, you know, I mean, I was such a huge Rocky fan and was willing to do anything. And so I put together that band, actually, with Matt Harris, who, you know.
One of my favorite dudes.
Yeah, and Kyle.
One of my favorite dudes.
And I loved playing with Rocky. That was the last band I was in.
Yeah.
And then I had to deal with all these health problems, and I turned down a bunch of fun stuff.
Health problems?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
I just had some gastrointestinal stuff that no one could figure out for like a year and a half, and I actually had to tell Alejandro I couldn't go out, and it was heartbreaking. Oh. Yeah.
Shit, that would be another legendary guy and fun guy to hang out. Are you better now?
They're figuring it out. I'm getting better, yeah. I mean, I've been working on it really hard, but it's been super depressing. How's that for a bummer for a radio show?
That's great. That's what I'm looking for.
This is where you, like, crank the speakers and, like, you know, do the old school punk thing where you like slice the speaker to make it distort. So all you really hear is like,
well, so it, I mean, that's been, how long has that been?
About a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's getting under control. You're feeling better.
Yeah. I actually read an interview that, Jimmy Page got really sick and stopped. I mean, not to compare at all because there is none, but, it helped me, you know, to read about all these other musicians who struggle with health stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, Jack White has a broken first finger. You never know that until he has to play bar chords like this.
Oh, shit.
You know, use a second finger. And it's just like all these interviews I read with all these different people about their struggles and kind of inspired me to, like, you know, go, oh, hey, you know what? I can use this to, like, that's actually pushed me into more production stuff and more studio stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all good. It's just, you know, you kind of just go with the flow, I guess. What?
No, I just, I hate the thought of that having sickness to your stomach. I have a friend that had that same thing. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with her for a long time.
It's really frustrating.
And then it just kind of went away.
Yeah.
But you don't drink or anything anymore.
No. Well, I went to rehab for that. That helps.
Oh, yeah.
a lot of treatment, a lot of, yeah, I mean, you know, I basically hit a bottom and I stayed there for like 8 years. It was a really weird time. And then I finally got into rehab and got sober and rehab, they were smart enough to realize that I had a bunch of unresolved grief stuff. And so they put me into trauma for another 2 months and I got to work on that. And, so it's been a long road of recovery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For all of us, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, recovering from actual traumas, recovering from the trauma of dealing with this business for this whole time. And, you know, it's interesting too that, you know, as we get older, we've kind of diversified our interests more than like when we were young. I was the dude in Mr. Rocket Baby. You were the dude in Pryor. Like, that's it. But now there's like, oh, the Kyle video guy, or he's producing a record, or he's playing guitar with these. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think it's, I mean, I think that's healthy. I remember it is healthy. And it's like my mom said, you know, it's like if you ever told my mom you were bored, she would say, life's too interesting to be bored.
Yeah. There's always something you can do.
Yeah. And I think that's the cool thing is like, you know, exploring and learning about yourself and others. And I don't know, just what do you want to do? I mean, I think it's, I hear a lot of, you know, complaining about whatever, the way the music business is and stuff. And I think it's actually a really great time because nobody's stopping anybody from doing anything they want to do.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? And there's nothing really, it's before, you know, you basically had to have a label to be able to get your stuff out, you know? Now you don't.
But we've both been on labels, and the thing is like, what do you want? Someone to just give you a bunch of money and treat you like shit? Like,
right.
At least now you have control over, you know, we do have control over what we do and what we put out.
I mean, that's a whole, we could have a whole show on about all of what to do about all that, but.
Well, how are you handling, I mean, now you're a label owner.
And I don't think of it that way. That's people say, you know, so you have a record label, and I go, nope.
Yeah.
Because what I wish for and have always wished for is like a collective, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, to me, it's like getting all these artists together and the kind of like, you know, helping do it together, you know? I don't know. It's just like you said earlier, you know, do you have a team helping, you know? And that just means, do you have people helping, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody needs that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's a lot to do if you're trying to, especially nowadays. I mean, you know, you could spend your whole day just trying to keep up with your emails.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I want to do that, but yeah, so that's all that really was, is like, you know, hey, let's get together some people who want to do some stuff and do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which a lot of people are doing that, you know, like it's cool.
It's good. It builds community.
Yeah.
And people rely on each other and not some person that's a bean counter that's about to lose their job because they signed a band that might not sell a million copies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, for Sparrow Songs, I'm such an artist advocate. Like, you have no idea. Like, you know, so it's all about that to me. Like, it has nothing, you know. I got this conversation with Laura Scarborough because she was like, you know, what are you going to call it? Blah, blah. I was like, it's not about it. It's about whatever we're working on, which would be you and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's really where the focus is. It's just on whatever we're putting out at that moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And you guys, so with Laura, you said you were doing two albums?
Well, she's mixing her live
thing,
and then she's going to put that out and then put out her record.
Is the live thing the thing that you sent me in the video?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds great. It looks amazing, too.
Well, yeah, and we're mixing that now, so it's going to sound even better.
Was that filmed, like, on a show here? Or was that...
It was public access. And it's awesome because it's HD 5 cameras. I remember I saw that and I was like, this is what people used to pay like $20,000 to get made for them. You know what I mean? And they're just doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you.
Man,
if you're a band out
really
there.
Come a long way.
Public access rocks.
Yeah. You know, I had Dave Pruitt on here and we remember the old days.
Yeah.
Raw Time and Capsize. I think I saw you on there.
Oh, yeah. I love Dave Pruitt.
Yeah.
I just saw him the other day, so.
He's still out filming bands still. He's such a great fan of music. he reminds me of like an Eddie Trunk kind of guy, like a guy that's just always out promoting stuff.
I picture like a Batcave library that you like have to drive to different sections. Yeah. Like he has so much footage. Yeah, he's such a sweet guy. I'd be cool to, I don't know.
God, you think about it, as much as he's done, it's probably like, you know, at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when they go to put the Ark away in that giant place where you just, that's what it's like.
Right. Our warehouse 13 or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. You can find Pariah and Mr. Rocket Baby and Joe Rockheads and your...
But it is great because when I'm like, hey, man, I need some video footage of Sims, he's like right there. He's like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is the Sims Foundation doing? Good? Staying up,
they saved my life.
Contact with them?
Yeah, I do. You know, they seem like they're doing great.
They've saved my life too, I'll be honest with you. And I'm great. You know, I'm sorry. I'm glad that something good was able to come out of that. And it really, it helped me at a time when I was at a place I didn't know whether I was coming or going. And without it, I wouldn't have been able to come out of it, I don't think.
Well, that makes me,
to be honest,
super, yeah, you know, grateful to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have anything to do with the Sims Foundation, really, because it's, you know, besides that, I appreciate it, you know. Yeah. And I used to try, like I was trying to be on the board for a while. And yeah. And it's just hard because, you know, every time they say Sims Foundation, I think of Sims, like I can't even separate the name.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So it was really emotional for me. But so I try to just, you know, support it and do whatever. But I don't, you know, I just think it's great, you know. I mean, I wish it was there for Sims.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why it's there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad David's on the board.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, Alejandro was on the board for a while and, yeah, they've had a bunch of cool people helping.
They've had some crazy motherfuckers on the board. I loved that night as a couple of days of, practicing for that Elliott Smith thing. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That was so cool. You're talking about the Elliott Smith tribute concert that benefited Sims.
Yes. And we raised a lot of money for it. Yeah. That ended up being great. We all got to hang out for a couple of days.
And so many, just it was a beautiful night.
Yeah.
It was hard to believe it was that beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like we were playing like in a forest in the Scottish Rite Theater.
It was
like,
so beautiful, yeah. And Elliot's parents were there, I know. And I'd never seen anyone like, I mean, David can do anything, I think.
It's pretty amazing. The way he did that was so amazing to me. I saw him in a whole different, I was like, wow, you know, what a cool, I mean, to pull everyone together like that and to put that together. And it was his idea.
Yeah.
You know, he just decided to do that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was beautiful. This is amazing what
he did. You know, he like flew to New York the next morning.
I know. And, and like, he flew in rehearsed the day all before day. From LA.
Yeah.
I know.
And like rehearsed all day to play a show that night.
You need to talk to him. Yeah. How do you do that?
Crazy energy. Is there anything that I'm missing that's going on? Oh, I know what I did want to ask you.
Yes.
Sorry. As a total fanboy, because I'm a crazy fan of Larry Sanders' show.
Right.
You were on there with the Butthole Surfers. I know you guys just played, but how awesome was that?
It was super awesome.
Did you get to hang out with Gary Shandling at all?
A little bit, yeah. And it was super awesome. Just, I don't know if you've ever seen that. You saw the footage?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much exactly what it was like. It was. I just thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
What's the guy from Best in Show? I'm spacing his name. Anyway. I'm spacing his name.
He was on there too?
No, but I met him at a different show. Oh. And that was a better story, but I can't even remember his name.
So Gary Shandling was nice? Did you get to talk to him?
How did
you guys get on the show? Did they like you guys?
They loved Gibby. Gibby, you know, his dad and everybody, they all,
right.
they, you know, yeah, Mr. Peppermint.
Mr. Peppermint, that's who he was.
I don't know how they got on that show, but, they, you know, it seemed like Gibby knew all those people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems like the kind of guy that would hang out with some irreverent comics and people like that.
Gibby is like the coolest, craziest uncle you could ever have. You know what I mean? Like, I just love Gibby.
At one point, I got insanely jealous of him. Like,
He was doing the fire symbol?
No. No. No, but that was pretty cool.
That's why I got jealous of him. We can't do that now.
I remember waking up early one morning and going to go get coffee and putting on 101X, and he was the morning guy.
Do you remember his radio show?
Yeah, I do. And that's what I was like, what? I want that show. How did this happen?
His show was so great.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so great. And I used to listen to it all the time. And I actually recently was looking for links to it because I want to listen to it again. I mean, it was, he really had a great radio show.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I think he won the best, I mean, I don't know if I should say this over the air, but he won the best DJ at that radio station. And then, but they had already fired him. So they went and got his award for him. He was really pissed off about it.
What did he get fired for? Irreverence?
Being brilliant.
Yeah, sure. How long was he on there? Because to me, it seemed like it was like 3 months or something.
Yeah, I don't know how long he was on there.
I do remember.
How's that for helpful?
Yeah.
I really don't know, but I love that show so much. Yeah. It was just, yeah, it was over the top.
What's he doing now? Where is he?
I don't know. He has a kid now. He's living in New York. I know he just did that record with Jack White.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really good. It's on Third Man Records. Yeah. You know, it knocks. You haven't heard that song?
No.
You should check it out.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
I miss him. And what about Paul and all those guys? Are they any of them here?
Or? Paul's here and he's producing. And
yeah.
Yeah, I just talked to him today. He's doing great.
Didn't he do a 16 Deluxe or something? Or no?
I don't know if he ever
did.
I don't know if he did a 16 Deluxe record. What happened to Carrie?
She's still around.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, they still do shows. 16 Deluxe. They're
back. They played the Music Awards recently. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. That was always a great band.
It really was.
What are you listening to now that you like? Anything new out there that's exciting?
What do I like? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I like. But what am I listening to right now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been stuck on Anthony and the Johnstons for like 4 years now.
I haven't heard that. Who is that?
Anthony, he's like, he was just in Anthony and the Johnston. He was in I'm Your Man with that Leonard Cohen. He was one of the performers in that.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I love them. I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm always working on. I love popular culture, which nobody really knows yet. But yeah,
where do you think he'll be playing out?
He lives in Brooklyn and plays out. Yeah, he just did
CMJ. Plays out up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How does that work? Does he ever come here? Come for South by, or you go up there?
It doesn't work. He's just missing in action. No, he's living in Brooklyn and he's doing his thing. And yeah. We made that record when he lived here.
Okay.
So, yeah, right as soon as we finished, he split.
Do you go up there a lot to New York? Do you like
sometimes.
It? Yeah.
I mean, I used to. I haven't been in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, my cousin, my mom's sister lives there.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
When Laura's album comes out, are you going to be playing in the band or will it be like the band in the...
I might play some guitar in it. Okay. I don't know yet for sure. I mean, she asked me to. I just need to get it together a little bit.
She's got Hauser.
Yeah.
Man, that guy's just...
sick bass player.
Yes, sick.
Yeah.
And I saw Jeff Johnston playing the Saw, which I love all the time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Saw.
You ever try that?
I haven't.
Me neither. I'm scared that, like, it's like a harmonica. It's like I'll never learn how to play harmonica because I know that for like 5 months people are going to hate me. Because I'll be like, no, wait, I'll play harmonica. And I'll be like, no. Yeah.
Oh, man, I have to tell you, your voice on that Elliott Smith thing blew me away.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it really did. I know I've told you that before, but I'm trying to get you to make this Johnny Gowdy record we're talking about.
Let's get together and do something. We could even do it here. I've got plenty of stuff.
Yeah.
Got the MC-505 and the pocket piano.
And the Rhodes.
And the Rhodes. I've got a little electronic drum set down there.
Let's do it, man. Let's make a freaky record.
Mm. So there's nothing I'm missing? Outside of check out sparrowsongsmusic.com because Sparrow Songs is like a craft site.
Right. And that's a weird craft site. Did you see it?
I was like, I just kind of dialed it up thinking without clicking on the link. And then I was like, surely this is not it. I didn't even see music on there. I was like, beads.
So weird. Yeah. It's like a stuffed bird with like a, yeah it looks really creepy.
So people can go there and find music. They can find popular culture there. And is Tristan, how do you say it, Rudat?
Tristan Rudat, yeah.
Rudat. That's a great album too.
Thank you, yeah. He he's an interesting musician. He was in 151 and I love Tristan.
Where is he?
He's in Attleboro. Living the dream. He's got like a brick warehouse that's like his studio that he pays like, I don't know what it is, but it's like, you know, like we used to be able to do in Austin. Yeah.
$100 a month.
Or something. Yeah. For like this giant warehouse that next to a river.
It's funny. I lived in the Congress House when I first moved here for $150 a month rent in 1991.
Yeah. Well, we all lived in a house for $300 each. I remember.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
In Pariah, you guys all lived in the same house?
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. Yeah.
Me, Sims, Renee, and Steve-O, and it was a fun house.
Who's Steve-O?
Steve-O's a BMXer.
You mean like from...
Not that Steve-O, from Jackass. All right.
But he's a BMXer guy?
Yeah, he's a BMXer guy. He's a good friend of mine.
You know the guy that lives in Oklahoma? The guy that did the Birth of
Matt
Big Air?
Matt Hoffman. Right.
I was trying to find him the other day because I went to Oklahoma City, and a couple of days before I saw this 30 for 30 thing about him, that Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah.
And
if you want to find him, you should talk to Steve-O because Steve-O's good friends with them. They go up there and do that, him and Goot.
I couldn't believe that guy's story, man.
Oh, about the broken legs and all that? Or which part?
His spleen exploded.
Yeah.
When he did a thing. And he was just like, he was so into, I don't know. There was something so soulful and amazing about him and his dedication to that.
Matt Hoffman, when he first came out, I'll never forget it, because we used to go to those BMX shows all the time, because my friends were all, I was a BMXer too when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And so I was into it. And Matt Hoffman, man, he came out and they introduced him, and it was before anybody knew him, and he was in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And he came out and he just instantly doubled everybody's air, like instantly.
Yeah.
And then he was doing flips and shit, and everybody was, I mean, it was off the chart, dude.
You know what? That just
he had the coolest helmet too.
Am I wrong, or is there not a scene in that Pariah video
on the ramp with Udo and Goot and Steve-O and all those guys?
Okay.
We love that whole scene, you know. I mean, I used to wear shin guards when we played, just because I like shin guards. It's like no pedal is gonna hit my shin, but
let's bring shin guards back.
I know.
Well, man, it's been great having you. I'm glad that you came over and we had this conversation.
Thanks, Johnny. Yeah,
I enjoyed
appreciate you asking.
And let's make some music.
Yes,
let's
please.
Do that.
All right,
I love you, man.
I'll be back.
Oh, yeah. Butthole Surfers. You know what? I'm on a mission now. It's the Butthole Surfers on vinyl. Looking for it. That's what I'm going out for. Kyle Ellison. What a great guy, man. I am so glad that we reconnected. Been sending him some songs and talking about getting together and doing some music. I know he's working on that Laura Scarborough record. That should be exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing that and hearing whatever else he does. He's a fantastic talent and a beautiful person. Let's give it up for Kyle Ellison. All right? Hey, you guys, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Johnny Gowdy. You can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also, if you're interested in Instagram and what's going on with this, this might be coming out after Movember. So, I don't know, you can go back there and see what happened, how the beard ended, 30 days of facial hair with Johnny. All right. I'm going to play some music from Pariah, Kyle's old band, with his brother Sims, my friend Jared, my friend Dave, my friend Shandon. Fantastic band from a long time ago. They've reissued some music. Go out there and get it. It's on iTunes. You can get it. Pariah. Let's go. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Pariah. Thank you, world. Let's get down.